Just about 8:09 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tieker.
And I'm Kat Brooks. And on July 10th, 2015, Sandra Bland was pulled over allegedly for failing to signal by State Trooper Brian Encinia in Waller County, Texas. She was brutally ripped from her vehicle, slammed to the ground, and arrested. 3 days later, she was found hanging in her jail cell. The police said suicide, the community said murder, and protests erupted across the country. Recently, 39 seconds of cell phone footage from Sandra Bland's phone surfaced. Here is that audio.
Get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You trying to give me a ticket for your failure?
Get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended? You just opened my car door. You just opened my car door. So you're threatening to drag me out of my own car.
Get out of the car.
And then you're going to stun me?
I will light you up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
For a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for a failure to signal.
Get over there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's take this to court. Let's do
Go
it.
Ahead.
For a failure to signal. Yep, for a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
On my school.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right to
Put
record. This is
down.
My property. This
Put
is
your
my
phone
property.
Down.
Sir?
Put your phone down right now.
4 years later, has there been any justice in this case? What does continued state violence against Black women and girls look like? And what are the implications for our daily lives as Black women and girls? And what organizing is being done to address this piece of the crisis of state violence in this country? First, though, we are going to speak to Shante Needham, who is one of Sandra Bland's sisters. Shante, good morning.
Good morning, Queen. How are you?
Good, sis. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to start by, because one of the things in doing this work that continues to trouble me is we don't humanize the person, right? They're a victim, or however else law enforcement describes them. So I always want to start with, who was Sandy to you and your family?
Well, first, I want to thank you for giving me and my family the opportunity to humanize her, because I agree with you that too often we are not humanizing Black women especially. But Sandy was a daughter to my mother. She was a daughter, a sister, an aunt, a cousin, a friend. She was smart, beautiful. She would give you the clothes off of her back. She was very bold and unapologetic. She was just the life of the party. She had a smile that would light up a room anywhere she went. And we're very sad that she was taken away from us.
What has the last 4 years been like for you and your family? I mean, it's hard enough, of course, to lose someone in such a violent way. But also, you know, she really became the face of the conversation about state violence around towards Black women and girls.
I can speak for my family to a certain extent because we're all at different levels, right? But it definitely has changed our family dynamic. We were used to having our Sunday dinners and our sister days and holidays being spent together. And now, while doing them, we're missing that very void. We're missing her, so we have a void there in our lives. Whereas we used to play games and just laugh and joke, it's kind of like everybody being their own little world. We try. We really do try to get used to this new norm, but it's hard. It's extremely hard, especially when it's still going on with different women each and every. People like to say that it'll get better. It does not get better. What it does is it gets manageable. Because some days I'll be okay. Like 2 weeks leading up to July 13th, I cried, right? But on July 13th, I went to the cemetery and I didn't shed a tear. None that day. It just come in different waves. And we just have to deal with it accordingly as it come, because there's no handle on how to deal with the loss of a loved one, especially in the magnitude that we lost Sandy.
July 13th is, for our listeners, the day that Sandy was found in her cell. There's a saying, Shante, if it happened inside, it wasn't suicide. What was your initial response when you were told that she had committed suicide?
I was still trying to process it because I'm trying to figure out how she would drive all the way from Illinois to her school that she loved, to the state that she loved, and knowing that she would be getting out, I was just trying to process how they wanted us to believe that she would do such a thing. And also, once we got there, they really didn't have any information to back that story up. So it was kind of disheartening.
And not only did they not have facts to back the story up, but there were some pretty big factual discrepancies. I facilitated a panel with your mother and some of the other mothers in this movement. She talked about even the logistics around the size of the cell, Sandy's height, et cetera, would not have allowed her to have hung herself.
You know, I'm so sorry. All I heard was the end of would not allow her to hang herself. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, you're okay. I was just saying that not only did they not have initial facts to back it up, but as time progressed and the investigation moved forward, there were logistical things that you all learned that actually would have made it impossible to for her to have hung herself, correct?
Correct. And it just speaks to how the law enforcement officials down there truly, honestly, my own opinion, they work together to try and make citizens believe that things happened one way when they absolutely did not. And to be honest with you, I believe that they thought that they would be able to tell us, you know, that our loved one hung herself and we would just go on. But the thing is, it was just not adding up. And it started with the first day of us going down there. It was unbelievable. And I really wish that no one else's family would ever have to go through what we did, because it was the worst few weeks of our lives, to say the least.